And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Karen Carbone, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Demery, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, Michael John Casey, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 29, Bloodlines. Ryan Carter and J.B. Dix, oldest and best of friends, hunkered in their limited shelter, their guns cocked and ready for the inevitable attack from the natives. By squinting around the corner of the control console, Ryan could see the first glow of dawn through the open doorway and the shifting wall of bright emerald green of the eternal forest. Won't be long. He glanced back at the pallid green armorglass walls of the gateway chamber. The matter transfer unit could pluck you from here and send you instantaneously to there. Unfortunately, everyone who'd understood the workings of the gateways had died in the worldwide nuclear holocaust of 2001, taking with them the secrets of matter transfer. So when the chamber door was closed, triggering the jump mechanism, you had no way of knowing where there might be. It might be anywhere. The most recent jump had left the companions stranded somewhere in Central or South America, in the deeps of a dangerous tropical forest. After a desperate and lethal adventure, Ryan and his friends had just reached the gateway unit, moments ahead of the vengeful tribesmen. There was no choice. If they'd all tried to make the Matrans jump together, they would have been trapped in the hexagonal chamber. He'd ordered the others into the unit, while he and JB, the armorer of the group, stayed behind to secure their safe retreat. Now, there was only silence. Ryan wondered where the others had jumped to, and if they'd made the transfer safely. His thoughts dwelled particularly on his 11-year-old son, Dean. The other four who'd made the jump were all the closest of friends, though none quite as close as Christy Roth was to Ryan. Easing toward her late 20s, Christy was 5 feet 11 in her bare feet, weighing about 150 pounds. Her eyes were like liquid emeralds, her hair a cascade of living fire. She had come from a ville called Harmony, where she had been taught mystic skills by her mother, which included the force of Gaia that would give her unimaginable strength at a terrible cost. She and Ryan had been lovers since they began traveling together through the blighted society that was Deathlands. Both of them hoped that the day would eventually come when they might be able to settle down someplace. They hadn't found that place yet. The other woman in the group of companions was Dr. Mildred Wyeth, 5 feet 4 inches tall and a stocky, powerful 136 pounds. Mildred was a black woman in her middle 30s, with beaded, plaited hair. She had been born in 1964. Less than a year later, her Baptist minister father had been slaughtered in a firebombing of his church by a group of anonymous redneck butchers, concealed behind their white sheets. Mildred had gone on to become a leading expert in the medical science of cryogenics. Ironically, 11 days after her 36th birthday, Mildred had gone into the hospital for minor abdominal surgery, which went terribly wrong. Afterwards, they cryogenically froze her. Only a few days later came Skydark, the time when the heavens were filled with the dark shadows of nuclear missiles, and over 99% of the world died. But the hospital that held her in a dreamless state of frozen suspended animation had its own peaceful nuclear generator, computer-controlled, and it had kept Mildred alive until Ryan and his friends came along like latter-day princes and plucked her from the long sleep. Now she was the partner of John Barrymore Dix, weapons expert and longtime comrade of Ryan Cotter. To survive for long in Deathlands, it helped to have special skills. Mildred had been the chairperson of her local pistol club and had represented her country in the free shooting event in the Olympic Games, where she'd won the silver medal. Now she carried a Czech-built target revolver. The ZKR 551 was a beautiful weapon, with a solid frame side rod ejector and a short fall thumb cocking hammer, chambered to take a conventional Smith & Wesson 38 caliber round. There were two men in the group that had made the jump from the forest. One was a teenager, Jack Lauren, an albino with a shock of snow-white hair and eyes like smoldering rubies. Jack had become a friend of Ryan and the others a little later than Christy, after a murderous adventure down in the bayous. He was 16 years old, standing a bare 5 feet 5, weighing 120 pounds. Jack was a brilliant athlete and acrobat, better at hand-to-hand combat than anyone Ryan and JP had ever seen. Though he carried a satin-finished Colt Python with a 6-inch barrel, his weapon of choice was the throwing knife. He carried a number of the leaf-bladed knives with taped balanced hilts concealed about his person, and used them with deadly accuracy. Jack had been married for over a year, down on a spread in New Mexico. It had been a serene and happy time, but the long darkness had come to take both his wife Christina and his little baby Jenny. So now he rode again with Ryan and the others. A single long hunting arrow flew into the control room, its barbed point digging a chunk out of the plastered wall, falling to the floor a yard from Ryan, reminding us that they're still out there.
Good of them.
JB busily polished his glasses on the sleeve of his jacket. His Uzi and the Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun lay at his side, ready for instant use. Ryan glanced behind him again, thinking of the last of the vanished companions. Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner was a doctor of science at Harvard and a doctor of philosophy at Oxford University. He had been born in South Stratford, Vermont, in 1868. By some calculations, Doc Tanner was around 230 years old. He certainly looked like an old man, with a mane of silvery hair and a gnarled face. And his speech and most of his attire were undeniably Victorian. A frock coat that was slowly acquiring a patina of green over the glossy black material, knee breeches, cracked leather boots, and a gun that was originally popular during the War Between the States, a beautiful, gold-engraved, commemorative Jeb Stuart limited edition of the huge Lamah handgun. Like Jack, Doc had once been married, and there had been great happiness for Doc and his young bride, happiness compounded by the arrival of two adorable children, Rachel and Julian. In the late 1990s, the White Coat scientist had been working under conditions of great secrecy on Operation Kronos, an experiment with time travel, which was part of the totality concept. Their successes were few, and their hideous disasters enough to keep a special crematorium burning through the day and night. But they did catch Doc Tanner, plucking him from a crisp fall morning in November of 1896. They brought him forward to a secret laboratory in Virginia in 1998. But the time jump had seriously and permanently affected Doc's mind, and he refused to do anything to cooperate, declaring his intention to do anything that he could to sabotage the evil White Coats and their foul experimentation. He also made several determined efforts to reverse the trawling procedure and travel back once more to Victorian times to rejoin his lost wife and children. Eventually tiring of the recalcitrant old man, the leaders of Operation Kronos decided that Doc Tanner was more trouble than he was worth. In December of 2000, days before Skydark and the beginnings of the long winters, they cut their losses and pushed him into the future, into the Deathlands. There, he had eventually met up with Ryan Cotter and his companions. Ryan now sat cradling his Steyr rifle, wondering when the natives would gather their courage and rush the place. He was crouched behind a computer.